Today, 55 researchers from around the world begin a three-month journey by ship from Cape Town, South Africa, to study the impacts of climate change around Antarctica. It will not be pretty. The effects of climate change in Antarctica are visible. Scientists have also predicted the loss of ice cover in the Arctic due to climate change. And there, it's going even faster than they expected. In Alaska, that ice loss is drastically affecting certain polar bears. You might have seen pictures in the New York Times this week. Skinny, hungry bears showing up in Kaktovik to forage the remains of hunted whales in that small Inuit village. Todd Atwood is a research wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey's Alaska Science Center, one of the lead agencies tracking these polar bears. He joins us now. Todd, welcome.
Thank you.
So first, this story that we were reading this week, it was so compelling. These bears, sometimes 80 at a time coming into town, the town only has a few hundred residents. Remind us why. They can't get out on ice floes?
Well, so what happens is September is when sea ice reaches its annual minimum extent. And September also coincides with the whaling season, the bowhead whale whaling season. And what we've seen over the last 15 or so years is an increasing amount of bears from the southern Beaufort Sea population, which is the population that we're talking about.
Right.
An increasing amount of bears from that population are coming ashore. They're coming ashore because there's no sea ice available anymore in summer over the continental shelf, which is a narrow stretch of shallow water off of the Alaska coast.
Yeah.
When that ice is gone, the bears come ashore, and they hone in on that smell of the bowhead whale.
Mm.
And they aggregate around the village of Kaktovik, beginning as early as the middle of August, and they generally stay until the end of October.
Well, and we should say that these natives, the Inuits, who are these whale hunters, have permission to do it. It's a part of almost a religious ritual for them, and they dispose of the remains in sort of waste piles, and this is where the bears start, but then they sometimes wander in the village. And just we're understanding that the bears go out on this ice flow so that they can catch the seals there, that the people in the village could once see this ice shelf standing on shore, and now it's way out at sea.
Yeah, you know, we've been tracking changes in the availability of sea ice habitat for over 30 years in the southern Beaufort, and the changes have been, as you'd expect, really dramatic. Just in the last 15 years, we've seen the distance of the pack ice from the coast double. It's now well over 300 miles away from the coast during summer. And, you know, that's well beyond the continental shelf. That equates to basically a loss of habitat for the bears.
Yeah.
A loss of prime habitat, and that's why they're coming ashore in greater numbers.
Well, just to put a further point on it, we've done stories of people traveling in that area, completely separate stories, talking about one of the most heartbreaking things that they will see on sails is these polar bears who are going out to sea to try to find the ice floe and the seals, and it's not there, and they're getting into deeper and deeper water, and they're going to die.
Well, you know, we have recorded some pretty long-distance swims by bears, so every year we go out and sample or study the bears in the southern Beaufort. We do about a six-week field season. And one of the things that we do is tag about 20 or so bears with satellite transmitters. And from that, we've been able to record long-distance swims of bears leaving the coast and swimming to the pack ice and vice versa, leaving the pack ice and swimming to the coast.
Mm.
In some cases, we recorded swims of over 400, 500 miles.
Wow.
You know, that's a situation where a bear is getting in the water, thinking it's going to swim maybe to shore to begin denning. And obviously it doesn't realize it has a 400 or 500 mile swim ahead of itself.
Yeah. Look, you have been to this village, we understand. As you say, you put collars on some of these bears. Let's just take a second, because these people are talking about, you know, they open their Arctic entryways. I guess it's the equivalent of our mud rooms, you know. And there might be a bear that's found something that has attracted it. They even have polar bear teams that go out to scare them away with firecrackers or lights to try to protect the people. What's it like to see these bears in something like a town as opposed to on the ice floe where you as a scientist might be used to seeing them?
Well, it's not necessarily a novelty. Bears have come into towns before, and they're attracted by the smell of food. But what's really, I think, unprecedented about the situation in Kaktovik is the sheer number of bears that are coming to land. And then when those remains of the subsistence harvested whales run out, bears follow their nose into town because that's where people are storing, you know, the parts of the whale that they're going to consume. And I think, in general, it's pretty amazing what the folks of Kaktovik have been able to do to manage that risk. As you mentioned, they've got a polar bear patrol that works 24/7 during that period of time when the whales are being brought in, when they're being butchered, when the shares of the whales are being distributed to the townspeople. But they're pretty much stretched to their full capacity. You know, it's not uncommon to have bears in town on a nightly basis during the month of September and into October. And that keeps that polar bear patrol hopping. They're using non-lethal deterrents. They're using things like cracker shells and beanbag shells to try and keep the bears out of town. They do a really good job of it, and it's a testament to their ability to work with these bears that there haven't been any serious injuries to people or bears in the last few years.
Well, or tourists, because hundreds of people are coming just to see them. They might bus in or fly in from Fairbanks, you know, on chartered planes. But another aspect of this, I mean, who would think about this, that these locals have these permafrost freezers. You know, they've been doing this for 100 years. It's so cold there, and that's where they store some of the whale meat. But those are melting because of the warming temperatures, so they're having to come up with freezers that will be bear-resistant. There's a nonprofit, Defenders of Wildlife. It's sent Kaktovik these stainless steel food containers and these bear-resistant storage containers, which people are trying out there. So it's just, you know, the different ways their lives are changing are, it's pretty interesting. But meantime, what's endgame here? I mean, yes, these bears that would maybe normally starve are now fattening up on the whale remains, but where does it go from here?
Well, that's obviously the key question. In the early 2000s, we estimated that about 4% of the population was coming ashore, and they were spending, you know, maybe 20 or so days on average on shore. So it was a pretty trivial set of circumstances. They were coming ashore in small amounts, and they weren't really spending much time on shore. In 2014, we estimated that close to 40% of the population came ashore, and they spent basically over 2 months on land. So if you're spending 2 months on land and you're a polar bear, that's 2 months less time you have to be on the sea ice hunting seals, depositing body fat. And there's a benefit of coming to shore in that you get to feed at the bone pile, but you're fasting until that time when the bone pile is stocked with the bowhead whale remains. So I think that for now, when you've got 30% of the population or so coming ashore, those bears are probably making the right decision. They have to fast for about 6 weeks, but they get this payoff of this really kind of energy-dense food, the blubber from the bowhead whale. The question is, if this trend continues, this trend of increasing bears coming ashore, what's the payoff going to be for those bears that feed? Because the amount of food at the bone pile doesn't really change much from year to year. So the more bears that come ashore means the less food for each bear to feed on. The other issue is the bone pile in Kaktovik is about, you know, a kilometer and a half from the village. And if you've got 200 bears hanging out in the village or on the outskirts of the village, and they run out of food at the bone pile, that's a lot of hungry bears to contend with coming into the village. And I worry that that's going to present a risk to people and also a risk to the bears.
Well, and the villagers would say they're the first ones who don't want the bears to be hurt, even as they're eating into their thawing permafrost freezers. Look, these are just one of the bear populations. There are 19 recognized bear populations, and not all of them are responding this way to sea ice loss. Some are stable, and that's feeding the theories that climate change isn't really happening because it's just this one bear population. What would you say to people who still, with what is overwhelming scientific evidence, and now there's anecdotal evidence of bears in this town, still don't believe in climate change? What would you say?
Well, I would say that that just doesn't square with the facts. The changes in the extent and availability of sea ice are really well documented. And there's been dramatic declines in both the extent and the temporal or the timing of the availability of sea ice. The other thing I would suggest to people that are still kind of on the fence about climate change is visit one of these villages and talk to the people that live there. They're not on the fence of climate change. They realize the climate is changing because they're experiencing it every day.
They're not on the fence, they're on the front line. Todd Atwood, research wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey's Alaska Science Center. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.